You don't have to look at the text right now. I want to just introduce you to a process. And I need to begin by saying that we have a tremendous disadvantage of living when we do, to try and come to text in any kind of transformative way, simply because we live in an age where we are totally overwhelmed by information. Just to put that in perspective, in 2006, it was measured that there were 14,000 new blog spots being registered on the internet per day. Now everybody knows what a blog spot is. It's somebody writing about their life. So with 14,000 blog spots a day, if that's carried on just for a year, you'd have over 6 million blog spots. And if each person on their blog spot just wrote one page, they would have produced over 1.8 billion pages. So that gives you some sense of how overwhelming the amount of information is that's out there. If I can take you back just 250 years, just over 250 years, John Wesley, who was the founder of the Methodist tradition from which I come, had read every single book that was in print in English in his life. So from that picture of what's on the internet to Wesley, who can read all the English books in his life, and he wasn't that prolific. He was a prolific reader, but it's just a comment on how few. Now, if I can take you back 2,500 years to a place where the Buddha speaks and nobody writes down, just Ananda remembers with this amazing capacity to remember, you'll realize that we're standing a very long way away from the text that we're trying to encounter. And I was interested in during Kitasara's talk how we panic when we don't know how to go and look it up afterwards. What page was that? What is the reference? Will there be a link? Will it be on the disk? And I was looking at, we're embarking on the Sutta study and we want to go and study, we're going to start with Bhikkhu Bodhi's books in the Word of the Buddha, but hopefully we're going to get excited and we're going to go out and buy the Samyutta Nikaya, that's 2,080 pages. The Digha Nikaya, that's 656 pages. The Majjhima Nikaya is a 1,424-page. The question is, how does one take that amount of information, pass it through a process of formation that leads to our transformation? That's really the question. How do we take information and allow it to become transformation? And so I'm introducing you to a very simple process that comes from the Western monastic tradition. And so in the spirit of Sacred Mountain Sangha, where we are focusing on the tradition of the forest monks and the forest Sangha, forest teachings, we're also bringing to the course whatever will be helpful as a tool. And so I'm offering this as a tool, an empty tool. It has no weight in terms of content. We will put the content into it, but as a process, it is a very simple process. It involves taking a text, taking a sutta, and reading it four times in a group. It doesn't involve taking notes, because we want to try, if we can, move from our head into our hearts. And they say that's the furthest distance for anyone to travel in the world. It's about 11 inches, but most of us really battle to make the journey. And so we want to try and get from our heads, with all this information, to our hearts, which is the place of transformation. And so we don't have notebooks. I've deliberately not given you the notes for the process. I will be giving you notes, because I see you getting very insecure already. There will be notes to tell you how the process is. But just sit back, put down your notebook, and just feel how this process might be. How could it be, maybe, to sit at the feet of the Buddha and not have a notebook or a banana leaf on which to write something? and just have to remember, because that really is where we begin. So we'll have a sutta, and we will be in a group of four people, and the first person will read the passage, and we will simply listen. And as we listen, we will have a question in our mind which says, what in this reading, what word or what phrase jumps out at me as I hear these words being read? And when the reading ends, we will simply reflect quietly in silence for a few minutes, 2 minutes, 3 minutes. And then each person in the group will simply speak into the silence of the group the word or the phrase that has struck them. There'll be no embellishment. You won't have to explain why you chose the word or unpack it in any way. You will simply say, the word that struck me in this reading was this, or the phrase that struck me was this. And when each person, and you can share randomly, you don't have to go in a circle, but when each person who feels comfortable to speak has spoken their word or their phrase, there'll be another pause, just a quiet pause to allow that insight to find a place. Wow, that's a different word. Just allow that to sink into the silence, a few minutes. Then the next person in the group takes the text, the same text, and reads it, but this time we hear that reading in a different voice. And when we read, we don't dramatize the reading, we don't make it all, we read it in a very simple tone, very simply and slowly. But we now hear the reading for a second time in another voice, and we have a question in our mind: what is this passage inviting me to be or to do? What is this reading inviting me to be or to do? Again, the reading ends, there's a place of silent pause, and again, after the pause, there's a sharing, this time with a little bit more embellishment, as we talk about, I really sense that this passage is inviting me to be this kind of person, or inviting me to do the following. There's no interrogation from the group, nobody's asking questions of the sharing. We simply receive the sharing, we let it fall into the silence. After everyone's finished sharing, again we pause quietly. Reflect on what we have spoken, reflect what the others have said. Then there's a third reading. A third reading is by a third person, same text, different voice. And the question in our minds this time is, what response or what resolution do I want to make as a result of what I'm hearing? After the reading, quiet reflection. After the quiet, again, a sharing. I really feel, after hearing this reading, I want to respond like this. I want to resolve to be or to do the following. And let me say that as the readings happen, you might find that the first phrase that strikes you and the second invitation are not connected. They might be. You might pick up that one phrase and that will become the subject of the three questions, but it might not be. So there's no rule about what you have to reflect on. So those are three readings, three sharings, three contemplations. The fourth reading concludes the practice in that there is no question. We simply hear the reading for the fourth time, and we allow it to just be. And then we end the session by a quiet reflection as we've heard the text for the last time, just allowing it to sink into our hearts. This process is traditionally known as Lectio Divina, and the four Latin words, this is all in the notes I'm going to give you right now, the four words that it's based on are Lectio, which means to read, Meditatio, which means to reflect, Oratio, which means to respond, and Contemplatio, which means to rest. So there's four R's if you want to remember it. It's read, reflect, respond, and rest. So for those of us who have been participating in the retreat, we've had a chance to work with the contemplative reading process in a group. where the same reading is done four times, once by each different member of the group, and we answer each time a different question. We're now going to look at how one is able to adapt this ancient Western monastic practice that, quite frankly, could probably work with any kind of text. I've often been tempted to take something out of Time magazine and apply the principle to it, or the practice to it. How does one then take this group process and apply it as an individual, where particularly our distance learners might not have the facility to be able to do this reading in a group? The first thing to remember is that in contemplative reading, we are reading not for information, but for transformation. We are bombarded with information, and most of that information does nothing to transform our hearts. Probably not for good. And so the question is, how do I take this information, this sutta, this particular text, and allow it to become transformation for me? So there is the first stage is the stage of preparation. This is, as it were, off the spot. This is not the actual process of contemplative reading, but before the time, one would select the text with which you're going to work. How one identifies what you're going to work with in contemplative reading can probably best be understood by the analogy of a helicopter. Often here in the Drakensberg, one will see a helicopter flying over the mountains, and it covers a great deal of territory as it flies. But then it comes to a certain point where the helicopter then descends and lands, and it places the hikers or the soldiers or the rescuers at a particular point from which they then hike slowly along a mountain path or a ridge, and only to be picked up later by the helicopter and ferried onwards or ferried home. If one takes that analogy and applies it then to the reading in the Sacred Mountain Sangha course, the reading a chapter of Bhikkhu Bodhi's in the Buddha's words, reading one chapter a week for the 10 weeks of this particular section or module of the course, that would be flying in the helicopter. We're covering a lot of ground, we're covering a whole chapter in a week. That's helicopter flying. But during that helicopter flying, we might notice a sutta, or perhaps some of Bhikkhu Bodhi's introduction to the suttas in that particular chapter, which appeals to us, and we say, you know, I really want to go and hike this section. So that then becomes the section where we bring the helicopter down, as it were. We get out and we say, I'm going to contemplatively read through this section. So we've chosen our text. Be careful not to choose only your favorite themes or passages. I think we all know the danger of that is to just jump on your own little hobby horse every time. Also be aware of presuming that if you know the text, that you know what it is saying. We might come to the sutta about the hole in the yoke and the turtle at the bottom of the sea, and there's a temptation to say, oh yes, I know what that's about. Contemplative reading tries to stay open as much as possible by saying, I don't really know. I certainly don't know today what this text is going to speak to me about. Once you've selected your text, you read it, as I've said, four times. Reading is at a moderate pace and savored as one would a very tasty bonbon or sweet, in like a boiling that you keep in your cheek and allow it to slowly dissolve. It might be useful in every second reading not to read almost as if you were reading aloud. In other words, to mouth the words like somebody who's learning a language would read. Just mouth the words or even whisper the words as you read. Read aloud if you don't think the neighbors will have you carried away. But just slowing that whole pace down, so we're not speed reading, we're not whizzing over anything, we're hiking through the text. After each reading, a period of silence is held for the words to find their place within us. So here then, that's all the preparation. Here's the sequence. The first reading, we read, and the question in mind during the reading is, what word or phrase in this reading strikes me? So we read the passage, we reflect what word or phrase strikes me, and it is at this point that we stop, we reflect for some minutes, and then this is the point at which we introduce the journal. We take the journal to be a companion on the journey of contemplative reading and of this whole process. If I could just pause for a moment and say something about journals. The biggest danger that really bedevils our keeping of a journal is the thought that somebody else is going to read it. Some years ago, I accompanied a very dear friend in her dying and was very close to her for the last month of her dying of cancer. And part of what we did together, Penny and I, is made a decision about the 15 volumes of journals that she had over the last number of years of her life. And on the day of her funeral, those journals were taken to the undertaker, placed in the coffin, were cremated with her. And that's always a lovely image for me of the journal. The journal, no one's going to read the journal. Nobody really is interested. There's enough information out there. So write, don't write as if somebody else is going to read it. It's just going to put a very strange pitch on the whole dynamic. So in the journal, having read the passage, you simply note what this word or phrase is that strikes you. Do it quickly in the sense of do it from your guts. You don't reflect on it. You don't analyze it. You simply write the word or phrase down, and then you step back, almost like the bird stepping back to the other branch. You then look at what you've written, and you ask questions like what thoughts or memories or emotions, attractions, aversions, opinions have arisen in the looking at the phrase. And in the journal now, you simply brainstorm these observations without judgment or analysis. For example, you might say, this phrase that I've recorded makes me anxious. I remember a teacher once saying this. I'm interested in why this struck me. You're reflecting, you're now dialoguing with your journal about the phrase that you've written. That's the first reading. You read, you record the phrase or the word. In the second reading, we read the passage a second time. If you have a different translation, it's a good idea to use that so you hear different words for the same concept, same translation. The question in mind this time is, what do I sense from this reading that I'm being invited to be or to do? What am I being invited to be or to do? Once again, after the reading, with that question in mind, we hold some silence, we reflect, and in the journal complete this sentence spontaneously and without a lot of analysis. This passage invites me to, and you complete the sentence. This passage invites me to, and you write your response in the journal. And once again, go back to the written invitation that you've just recorded and notice your feelings, your opinions, your attractions, your aversions, your attitudes. How does this, seeing that in print, make you feel? The third reading, the question in mind this time is, what response or resolution do I want to make as a result of this reading? So I'm reading the passage, the sutta, for the third time, asking the question, how do I want to respond to this? Again, we read, silence is held, and in your journal you complete this sentence spontaneously without analysis. As a result of this reading, I resolve that I'm going to, or I resolve that I'm going to be. How is it that you want to respond? Having done that again as a kind of gut response, viscerally, without too much analysis, you now go back to that response or that resolution, asking and writing in your journal on the following, can I do this? You know, I've written that I want to do this, and this is my response, but can I really do this? Do I really want to do this? Is it realistic? Am I just being pious? You know, is this realistic? Is it in accordance with my values? How does seeing this response in writing make me feel? And all of this becomes the stuff of the journaling. Three readings so far. We come now to the fourth reading, The first reading was we read, respond to the phrase recorded. Second reading, we reflect, what am I being invited to be or to do? The third reading, we respond, what response do I want to make? And the fourth reading is simply to rest. This time, there's no question in mind. One simply rests in the words as they enter the heart and diffuse into our being. So you read again slowly, just allowing the words to wash over you, to seep into you. And then, if you have the opportunity or the facility, simply to take 5-10 minutes in a sitting, in a meditative posture, allow yourself just to rest in the words and the truth of the sutta that you've heard. Once you've ended that time, you can conclude with a bow, or perhaps a bow or with a chant, and that concludes the process of contemplative reading on your own. Just one more thing, and that I'd like to introduce into this process when you're doing it on your own with a journal, is the concept of the review. When you come to your next contemplative reading, whether it's tomorrow or whether it's next week, when you come to your next contemplative reading session on your own, I invite you to read your previous contemplative reading journaling. In other words, that you wrote and reflected on and journaled about in the previous reading, just get in touch with that again before you do your preparation and get into this contemplative reading. That way you establish some kind of link and you're able to follow the dynamics and the shifts that are happening as you go along the way. Thank you.